Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now we got a stacked show for you guys this week, as my colleague Mike Neff will join me momentarily to discuss all things Michigan. Now Kevin Harvick stretched a few miles to pick up his second win of the season on Sunday, as Austin Cindric showed that he's the guy to beat in the Xfinity Series on road courses. The Truck Series playoff field is set, and we'll tell you who we think gets bounced in the first round. And then Landon Castle joins the podcast to discuss his second season with Starcom Racing, as well as his Xfinity Series starts with Morgan Shepherd and JD Motorsports this season. And would a full-time Xfinity deal intrigue him going forward? But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those 5-star ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Michigan with Neff. All right, Neff, we were talking offline after the race on Sunday, and we thought it was a decent race at Michigan. Kevin Harvick came out on top a lot better than the first race. As I said, you know, I stated on this podcast a couple times, that Michigan race in the spring was one of the worst races I've seen all year. You could probably count Sonoma in with that as well. But Neff, this was a totally different story. They put the PJ1, traction compound, whatever you want to call it, down on the high groove, and drivers were using it. And this is the third straight time out of the last 4 weeks, because Watkins Glen didn't have the traction compound, that I feel like the traction compound's added, you know, better racing to the series, to the product. And Kevin Harvick used it to his advantage late and got the win.
Yeah, I was a little curious going into the weekend, because leading up to Sunday, it didn't seem like they were using it much, but you saw some of the trucks get up there into it, and mm-hmm. I think that gave people a little confidence. I thought it may not have been utilized through the whole turns, but the way they come off of turn four at Michigan and they all kind of slide up out there to that wall, I really thought it added to the ability of guys to slide from the bottom to the top, knowing when they got there that compound was going to kind of prevent them from running into the wall. And I felt like that added a little bit of confidence to guys that wanted to go try and pull slide jobs. And in the end, I mean, it's Michigan. I'm still truly confused as to why we needed sticky stuff at the top when they've yet to race up there since the repave. I mean, I would think that it should have more traction up there already, that they wouldn't need to put stuff down. But they did, and that is neither here nor there. I enjoy Michigan. I've always been a Michigan fan because of the vast array of lines that it has offered in the past. And we're not back to it yet, but I saw enough instances, especially in the trucks, of four wide this weekend to feel like we're getting closer.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think this race was above your average Michigan race, for sure. A lot of passing. We saw Martin Truex Jr. in the first stage. You go from the back all the way to the front, literally, winning the stage. You had other drivers start towards the back. Kyle Busch started in the middle of the pack. Eric Jones, and they drove up. I thought there's a lot of good racing. When you know, you say you're a fan of Michigan, always liked it. When I think of Michigan, I think horsepower and fast speeds. And, you know, Michigan's still probably the fastest track in NASCAR outside the super speedways. Unfortunately, like, you don't think of horsepower anymore because they're only running 550. But, yeah, man, Kevin Harvick, though, he got it done. His second win in the past 4 weeks. Neff, this four team's kind of clicking at the right time, kind of similar to what Joey Logano did last year going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I feel like I wouldn't say they're peaking yet. It was a great performance. It wasn't dominating. It wasn't like he led all day, but he was there when he needed to be. And for once, the closer closed, you know? But I give him credit that it seems like that whole organization seems to be getting better and getting closer. If anything, I feel like Boyer's a weak link right now.
Oh, yeah.
And this one, again, was another one of those where I felt like it was self-inflicted. I didn't really feel like the car was necessarily off. I just felt like he ended up screwing himself up. And again, I don't know if there's pressure getting to him there. We saw pressure getting to seven time, for sure. And it feels like, as an organization, they're getting it back to where they were last year, and if you're going to do it, now's the time to do it, as you get three more races before we go into the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know about organization-wide. Harvick's the best driver over there. He has been, you know, he's finished the top three in points like 7 out of the past 9 years or something. So,
right.
He's one of the top drivers in this sport for the past 15 years. Even when he was struggling with RCR back in the day. And RCR was struggling in general. But, yeah, you mentioned Bowyer, and we'll get to that. We'll get to Jimmy Johnson. The playoffs, you know, kind of turned upside down this past weekend. And I think we'll see that continuing with three races to go. But Harvick, I don't know. Do you feel like he could be making a run?
I do. I mean, I've felt like they just have been inching closer and closer to the front. And it seems like in the last month, they are definitely a force to be contended with. And when you had 5 or 6 wins last year at this point, and now you've got 2, it would seem to me like they've got the potential to peak and go on a run here at the right time. And we've seen him win at Indy before. I know he always is credited with being good at Bristol, but if you look at his history there, it's not really that good.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be it'll be curious this weekend to see how that 14 performs at a track that has historically been a bit of a challenge for them.
Yeah, he did win there, I think, 3 years ago, most recently. But yeah, like you said, he's always kind of struggled there, which is kind of surprising. But Neff, this race came down to fuel mileage.
They usually do.
At Michigan, yes, and sometimes, a lot of times, Pocono, which it did also just 2 weeks ago. And I bring up that because that race and this race, Kevin Harvick was confident, Ronnie Childers was confident that they could make it all the way on fuel when the other four teams couldn't. Like you saw, well, Keselowski didn't get the fuel cell full. Blaney ran out. Logano ran out. Logano led most of the final stint, though, which you're going to use more fuel by leading with the new package. Why do you feel like Harvick, I mean, you would think in theory that these, you know, they run the same motor, so they're going to get really similar fuel mileage, but that didn't seem to be the case.
It's all about that right foot.
True.
You saw the tracer on him during the final stint that he was on the gas in the straights, but he was down to 2 or 3 lights in the corners.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that for 30 laps, you're going to save some fuel. And I felt like the other guys, I just don't know if they – obviously, they didn't do as well at conserving that fuel. And there's an art to it, and Harvick has been excellent at fuel conservation for a long time. And he's one of those guys, you know, and I don't know where you learn that from, if it just is trial and error. But we saw Stewart win a couple races in his day. Pocono comes to mind, where they showed him in car literally stuffing the clutch in and coasting all the way through turn one at Pocono to save gas 1 year and went on fuel mileage. And it seems like there's definitely a knack for it, and Harvick has proven over his career to be good at it, and Sunday was just another example.
Are you a fan of fuel mileage races? Because I
love them.
Go ahead.
Intermittently. Mm. You know, I don't want every weekend to be a fuel mileage race. But the fact that you can usually count on Pocono and Michigan both being fuel mileage races – sometimes the 600 is a fuel mileage race, sometimes it isn't. It's interesting when there's a handful of people on the strategy. And that's where Sunday was neat, because literally the field was on the strategy. And you had everybody trying to make it, and then you get that final lap. And I feel bad for the guys on TV, because it's so hard to project to everybody what's going on all the way around a track. Mm-hmm. Because when you have 30 cars on fuel and 12 of them run out at different places all around the track, and you're trying to inform everybody of who is out, it can really be chaotic. And I give them credit for trying to give everybody as much information as they could while it was going down. But yeah, I enjoy them occasionally. I don't want every weekend to be a fuel mileage deal, but if we get 6 or 8 fuel mileage races in a year, I'm happy with that.
I totally agree with you, because you see surprises like this week. Ryan Preece finishes 7th. That's his first top 10 on a non-super speedway of his brief young career. He's only been racing really this year. I made a few starts a few years back, but you get surprises like that. You get surprises in the Coke 600 in 2017 when Austin Dillon gets his first victory. When I think of Michigan, one of the most memorable races in my mind – You probably know where I'm going with this. Jimmy Johnson runs out in the final lap. I think this is like 2009. Greg Biffle runs out, and then Mark Martin gets the win. So I think I got that in order, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. I think it was 2009, 2008, somewhere around then. And I mean, when you think of Michigan, you think fuel mileage. You know it's going to become a factor. And just like it was this weekend, and hey, we saw some of the veteran drivers get it done, like Harvick, Hamlin, Truex finishing the top five, and then some young guys like Larson and Suarez. But it was interesting because you look at Harvick and Hamlin, and you could throw Logano, I guess, and Kozlowski in there because they were at one point like 15 seconds above fifth place, which was Ryan Blaney, and he dropped back because he was in ultra-saving fuel mode. And then at the finish line, you had Larson, who jumped like five spots to get to third because of guys running out of fuel and him saving enough. And he was like 16 seconds back. So it's like, how much can you save? And obviously, Harvick and Hamlin had two of the faster cars all day. I think Hamlin had the fastest car all day. You could argue maybe Truex. But it was interesting how much they could save or and still be fast compared to the rest of the field.
Yeah. And again, it's all about the right foot and when and where you choose to conserve. And it's definitely an art form, and there are guys that are good at it and guys that aren't. I'm with you. Hamlin and Truex, I thought, were the class of the field. And that was one of those where, for once, I was actually, and I hate to admit it, rooting for Hamlin to get a pit road penalty just because he was flying going through the field. Just like, and you mentioned Truex at the beginning of the race. I mean, he threw it up there on the high side even before the sticky stuff was really activated. Yeah. And on the first lap, passed like 20 cars. I mean, went down the backstretch literally like 5 miles an hour faster than everybody else on the track. And it was amazing to watch. So, yeah, I was a little bummed there at the end that you didn't get to see Truex and Hamlin come through the field again because they were so much faster. But, yeah, it's a matter of you know when and where to lift, and we've heard it all before. You slow down to go fast. That's what the older guys will say. And when you're dealing with this 550 horsepower package, momentum is everything. And so lifting off at the points where it doesn't really matter that you're in the gas is what allows you to save that fuel. And Harvick and Hamlin definitely did it to a T. And amazingly, I was surprised as many people that were further back in the pack actually ran out, because I figured with this package that they were back in there kind of drafting, that should have given them the opportunity to really save some fuel.
Yeah, that's true. And I feel like with this package as a leader, you're a sitting duck. If you're leading for like Logano, like they thought Todd Gordon said on the air, I think they interviewed him during the final round or maybe during the final caution. They thought they were good by like a lap or two, and yeah, he puts with three to go and ended up finishing 19th, 18th, 17th. So it's just like an IndyCar. We see the Indy 500 this year is a perfect example. Simon Pagenaud leads the most, you know, he won the race, but he led the most laps because he wasn't in fuel saving mode when the team's like, you got to back off. You got to get in second to save some fuel. Ultimately, it didn't cost him because there's some cautions there at the end, but I feel like with this package, you're a sitting duck out front if you're if you're in a fuel saving mode.
Yeah, because you're breaking the air for everybody.
Yeah, you're full throttle.
It's a little different, as you mentioned, when those two were so far ahead of third place, mm-hmm, that third place is kind of plowing their own air as well. But when you're in the pack and you do the restart and everybody's lined up, the guy up front is going to burn more fuel just because he's got to punch the hole in the air. That's basic physics.
Right. And I feel like this is a good transition point, Neff, because, we talked about Hamlin and Truex a little bit, and I thought they truly did have the best cars. We saw Truex, like we both said, go from the back to the front really quick. Hamlin, he was doing, he had a really good long run car, but they only led 43 and 6 laps, respectively, when you had the Penske duo of Logano and Kozlowski. We're looking back on it, dominated the race. It was interesting to see, because I would have thought Hamlin and Truex both led more laps than they did, but they didn't. And I feel like this is positive momentum for Hamlin, right? Because this is his fifth top five in a row. It's the first time, Neff, and I was shocked. I had to triple check this on Racing Reference. It's the first time he's ever finished in the top five consecutive races. So this is the best streak of his career, consistent-wise.
Yeah, I feel like that team has really started clicking. I mean, you start the year winning the 500, You say you're clicking already, but you've got a brand new crew chief. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. We've gotten spoiled in the last few years of driver crew chief combos clicking immediately. And Gabe Harp came over there this year, and he's a different crew chief than Wheeler was. And it takes a while to get the communication down and understand what adjustments go where. And so it has taken a little bit for them to really gel, but now that they have, and the other point, and I know I shouldn't jinx them, and it's probably going to ruin Bristol for them, but we have not heard pit road penalty for the 11 during this 5-race stretch. They have not shot themselves in the foot, and that's where, you know, if you don't do that, you get better finishes. I mean, it seems so obvious, but it happens all the time with that 11 team, and the fact that they've cleaned up pit lane and not shot themselves in the foot has prevented them from having to play catch up and fight through and risk damage and be restarting back there in the pack and the kind of things that end up ruining their days. So if they keep this rolling, I am a little surprised he hasn't had 5 consecutive top fives before. But at this point, unless, again, they start shooting themselves in the foot, there's no reason to think they're not a championship contender.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's also weird, and I'm looking at his Racing Reference page as we speak, but whenever Hamlin gets a new crew chief, so we had Mike Ford when he first started, they won a couple races, but he was a rookie. And then in 2012, he gets Darian Grubb. That was his first year with them. That was Hamlin's arguably his best year, I would say 2010, because he won 8 races and should have won the championship until he kind of flunked at home, Phoenix, I guess you could call it, and chucked the water bottle. Lasting image in my head right now. But then he switches in 2012, gets 5 wins with Darian Grubb. So they started off hot together. 2016, he said, Mike Wheeler's going to be the last crew chief of my career. Turns out that's not the case. But he won 3 races, Daytona 500, right off the bat. This year, you know, first year with Chris Gabehart, wins, he's already won 3 races. Like I said, he's got 5 straight top 5s, 12 straight top 10s, which is already more than last year, 15 top 10s. So he's on a roll, and Hamlin, we know the playoffs suits him well. They might not have over the past few years since this new playoff system was formatted in 2014, but he did make the championship four in 2014. And Neff, I really think he could be there at Homestead.
We've seen this before, and you know, you don't want to disparage people or you know, brush them with a broad stroke or whatever, but it's all about Denny's head.
Yeah.
I mean, when it all comes down in the end, it's all about Denny's head. And if he's got his head in the game and does not get down on himself, they have as good a chance as anybody at winning a championship. And the problem is when that little bit of adversity hits at ISM or at Homestead, how he handles it determines if he ever becomes a champion in this sport or not. And it's, you know, we've seen it over the years, and we know that it's in the background, and it's a matter of can he keep it in the background or will it come to the foreground. And if he can keep his head straight, there's no reason the 11 team can't be holding the trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that one. Neff, I feel like we should transition into talking about the playoffs a little bit, only because, as I mentioned earlier, they really got shook up this week. I mean, Suarez finished the highest out of the guys on the bubble. He finished 5th, gained a ton of points over the past 2 weeks, even though it seems like he's been there. It's, you know, he didn't run top 5 all race, saved enough fuel, really didn't even run top 10 all race, and then got top 5, so he gained a bunch of stage points, or a bunch of points, I guess, on the bubble. He's only 6 out now. Ryan Newman had enough fuel, finished 12th. He was just, you know, he finished better than where he ran all day. But then I feel like we really got to talk about Jimmy Johnson and Clint Boyer, as you mentioned earlier, because, 10 laps in or so, Jimmy Johnson's already 7 laps down, pretty much. Because it seemed like he was the first one to maybe use the traction compound or want to use it, and then he just kind of, he just drove in too hard and got in the wall. Is that fair?
Kind of seen that way. I mean, I don't know. You know, you never know exactly what's going on with somebody, but it sure looked like he was just being aggressive and ran out of talent. I mean, you don't want to really believe that with a seven-time champion, but that was basically what happened. I mean, he wasn't caught in somebody else's dirty air or something like that. He was in his own spot and simply overcooked it and bounced it off the wall and ended his day. And like I mentioned earlier, pressure is real. And this is one of those moments where it really looks like he's kind of cracking. And I don't know, you know, we've never seen him miss the playoffs. And right now, missing the playoffs is a real possibility. And they talked about it post-race about the fact that Jimmy is used to driving a loose race car off the right rear tire. And with the low horsepower, high downforce package, that's not how you drive these cars. And it is a matter of, at this point in his career, having to learn to drive the car differently. And that's a learning process. And when you've had seven championships doing it the other way, it's really a challenge to learn this new style. And at this point, he hasn't learned it yet.
Yeah, I agree. And he's honestly lucky that Bowyer had some bad luck later in the race, because had Bowyer not, Bowyer just needed a good day, just a solid day. And then lap 138 comes or whenever it was, and he's in the wall, whether it was his own fault or Paul Menard. It looked like to me Paul Menard got into him, but it looked kind of like Bowyer got loose a little bit before that too. I feel like you could argue either side of that, depending on which side you're in favor of. But yeah. But Johnson, yeah, I mean, he's I think, in my opinion, he's really lucky, because say Bowyer finished, I don't know, 10th where he was, right? He'd be like 40 points up. Then you'd have Newman 16th, 22 points ahead of Johnson. I mean, that's a bigger gap than just 12. And right. With three races to go, every point matters. So Bowyer really shot himself in the foot. And it's really been the whole summer for Bowyer since the first Michigan race when he got in an incident. And then he goes back to Michigan. I'm sure Michigan's not his favorite track this
not
this
right
year,
now.
even though that is the site of his last win last year. But what do you think about this? Because, you know, I was listening to the Athletics podcast the other night, and they were arguing, or they were, I guess, talking about how this essentially is like teams under 500 in the NBA playoffs or whatever, MLB playoffs, and they're trying to get the wild card, or they're trying to get the eighth seed. So they're probably going to be out in the first round. But you never know, because racing is different.
It's the chip in a chair mentality. As long as you're in it, you got a shot. And it's a matter of getting in it. But, and I agree with you, this has almost been like, who doesn't want the last playoff spot? I mean, these guys are doing everything they can not to get it. And it's funny, we're talking about Hamlin, and if you watch Clint Bowyer's interviews the last two or three times he's been interviewed at the Infield Care Center or whatever, if you put a FedEx fire suit on him, it would look like Denny Hamlin. I mean, it's got that Eeyore defeatist kind of attitude, like no matter what I do, I can't get it right. And, you know, sometimes that's the way things are going, and you have to just push through and overcome it. And at this point, we're going to find out if Bowyer can do that or not. But he's got to be kicking himself today, knowing that he could have given up a couple spots just to just play it safe and come out of there with a really secure points position. And now he's right back in the hornet's nest. And it's sometimes you're your own worst enemy.
Yeah, for sure. And there's been 9 races since the first Michigan race. He finished 35th there, 37th this week. But he's had 6 finishes of 20th or worse, including 2 20th place finishes in that span. He's honestly, and he was 10th going into the first Michigan race. Now he's 16th, obviously, on the bubble. He's even, like you said, it's who doesn't want the last playoff spot almost, or who doesn't want the last two. Because I would say Newman, I mean, he's fairly consistent, just kind of running 15th to 20th, and then maybe scoring a few extra points there at the end. He had 5 straight top 10s, or 5 top 10s out of 6 races. So I guess I shouldn't say that. I don't know, man. It's kind of tough to watch Bowyer, because he's known for all this energy, and then he's just dejected in the care center, like you said. And he said straight up, you know, that it won't matter if they make the playoffs if they can't get their equipment turned around. So I feel like that's kind of like you mentioned earlier, how you feel like SHR is kind of turning the corner. I don't know. I feel like Harvick's turning the corner. I don't know about SHR.
I don't. I mean, look at Suarez. They rebuilt that car and come around for a top five finish.
That's true.
And Almirola is another one of those that's kind of been shooting himself in the foot of late, getting himself into some positions where he shouldn't have been. I mean, Sunday was a perfect example. There was no hole there, yeah. And Flack drove into Hemric. I was trying to listen to the broadcast, and I'm like, how are they trying to make it sound like Hemric didn't give him enough room? I mean, there was no room. He was trying to put a complete square peg in a round hole. So, I mean, Almirola has shown that the speed's in the car. It's just a matter of he's got to get the head straight. So, I think Clint has the talent, and right now the bigger problem is in his head, and it's going to be a matter of can he attain that laser focus over these last three races to get himself in the playoffs. And you also mentioned Newman. I mean, we've seen this for most of Newman's career. He generally doesn't tear up his equipment. If he gets into something, it's usually because somebody else messed up. Now, he may take a fifth-place car and finish 8th or 10th, but he gets solid finishes and doesn't get those DNFs or bad runs very often. And we saw it, was it 2 or 3 years ago, he almost won the championship doing that. I mean, and that, I still wish he had that year just because it would have thrown total just chaos into points racing because he had no wins and really didn't contend for any wins. Was just pointsing them to death. And this whole new system is supposed to be win at all cost. And he tried his best to turn that all up on its head. So it's Newman's doing what Newman does. And I'm willing to bet that when it's all said and done, he's going to make the final 16. And wouldn't be surprised to see him get to the final 8. Just because other guys are going to push things and have a bad finish, and he's going to sit there and finish 8th place every round and work his way all the way into the final 8.
Yeah, over the past decade, I don't know if there's been a better points racer than Ryan Newman. Yes, there's been, Jimmy Johnson won he won 3 championships in that span, but he's just a great points racer. You know, he's not the flashiest driver. He doesn't win every race. He's won one race in the past 6 years, but he just points races you to death, and he's very good at it. And I mean, it gets the job done. No, he didn't make the playoffs last year, nor did he in 2016, I believe. But I mean, he's 12 up now. We got 2-3 races to go before the playoffs. Neff, you said you think Newman gets in. Who do you think gets that other spot then? Do you think it's Bowyer, Suarez, or Johnson? Because they're all within 12 points of each other.
Well, I've been maintaining all along that I think the whole Cinderella story thing is going to happen at Indy, and that Johnson is going to win the race at Indianapolis to get into the playoffs.
See, in theory,
I'm sticking with that.
So that would mean the two SHR guys are out, which would be crazy after getting all 4 of them in last year.
Right.
Got it. Now, that'll definitely be something to watch going forward. Anything else to talk about Michigan? Or else you want to talk about some Xfinity racing?
I mean, I thought the crowd was better at Michigan. I was glad to see that. I mean, it still wasn't great, but it was better than it has been. So I was happy to see that. I thought the celebration afterwards was really cool. Again,
that was awesome.
I don't want that to become a thing. You know, we had that in the NBA. When Steph Curry's kids got up during the press conference and were taking the mic, and it was really cute and all that, and it was fun a couple of times, and then it gets really old. And that's where I don't want this to turn into every time somebody wins, their whole family gets on a front stretch and goes for a joyride on the burnout. It's cool once or twice. I am curious to see if NASCAR issues some kind of a statement of how trained professionals were not allowed to ride on Kurt Busch's car to victory lane, yet a 7-year-old kid can get in the car and do burnouts. because I felt like we got a little bit of a mixed signal there. I do appreciate the fact that we have a 7-year-old hawking beer on national TV. That was a great image. But in all honesty, I like that. I mean, it drives me nuts that this whole image thing of we can't have anybody under 21, you know, if you win the pull award, but you're under 21, that it's got to be their, you know, their anti underage drinking campaign, and they're not allowed to say the beer sponsor's name. That's just dumb. And I mean, we're all adults here. We're all grown ups. So I'm glad they let him do it. They didn't like beep him out or come up with some issue statement on that. But I mean, I thought that was cool. And I really like that. You see a side of Kevin Harvick there that you don't really get to see very often. And I'm glad he shares that with us, because in all honesty, I think Harvick does have a little bit of an image issue with the fans, because he does come across as a hard ass. And seeing a lighter side of him, I think, really endears him to the fans a little bit more. As far as the racing goes, I thought the racing was better. I still think we need to work on tires. I understand that that Goodyear probably went conservative this year, knowing what happened at Indy when the COT came out and we had more downforce we had in a long time, and we had tire issues like crazy, that I think they went conservative this year with harder tires that don't wear out as bad to make sure excessive downforce didn't cause a lot of blown tires. I'm hoping that next year when we go back, we're going to have a lot more races where we have tires falling off a couple seconds during a run, because that will make a difference with the whole package, having an opportunity for teams to use tire strategy on top of just getting in and hammering down.
Yeah, I agree with you on the tires. I mean, we could harp this, we could, you know, talk about this to our boo in the face about the tires, but I mean, they didn't make a big difference at all at Michigan, obviously. But the broadcast, I think Steve Letarte was saying how Keselowski at one point, he took 4 tires and was 6 tenths quicker than the second fastest car, or guys that didn't take any tires or whatever. Yes, that makes a difference over a run, but I don't know, man. I agree that we need softer tires. Not that, you know, we never want to see a tire blow out, but the run, the wear over the run is the racing that we like. It makes comers and goers, the true comers and goers, like in Atlanta over the years, or a Fontana. Like, we harped about this so much on this podcast. So hopefully Goodyear takes that into account, not our word, but the driver's words, because that makes for some of the best racing. And I agree with you on the Harvick deal with Keelan. I think that was an awesome moment. It's funny how it was the second straight year at the same track that they did the same celebration. And Harvick's had a thing for good celebrations after the race recently. You think of Texas last year in the playoffs, when ultimately that win didn't get taken away, but it got taken away in order for him to advance to the championship, when he brought that kid down on the track and took a selfie with him. So, I mean, that kid was probably the coolest kid in his school the next day, getting to go on the track, taking a selfie with the winner. Like we talked about, I think Harvick's turning the corner. Him and Rodney Childers are, man, they're a dynamic duo together. They've had so much success since 2014, and I think that'll continue this year. Neff, you know who else is having a lot of success lately?
Who's that?
Austin Cindric. And if you would have asked Corey LaJoy, our buddy our buddy of the podcast, he probably wouldn't have seen this coming. Although Cindric does have a history. You know, he grew up road racing. He's only 20 years old, granted, but he's raced on road courses his whole career. Second straight win, Neff, and this one came at Mid-Ohio, dominated the race. You've definitely seen improvement this year from last year. And granted, last year, you know, you're splitting time between two teams. Roush Fenway in the 60 car, which we know was a mess, a disaster all year. It didn't matter who got in it, whether it's him, Chase Briscoe, or Ty Majeski. It always seemed to crash or find itself in the wrong position. But this year, he's with Team Penske the entire year, and it's definitely proven that it's, you know, he's just on a roll right now, and he could sneakishly be that fourth guy to get to Homestead.
I'm not ready to get that far on board yet. Let's remember that these were road courses.
Yeah, I know, but he was close last year, and he got wrecked out at Texas, which really kind of hindered him.
I mean, he's okay on ovals. I haven't seen him consistently land in top fives on ovals to be ready to say he's going to run for a championship. Again, we've known all along that he's a good road racer. And interestingly, I was watching the very beginning of the race, or right before the race started, and they were showing the highlights from the last, like, 6 years. And either winning or in second place was the 22 car with a different driver every time. So, needless to say, Penske and the 22 at Mid-Ohio, you're going to have a shot. So I was impressed with the way he won, especially the way he made the pass for the win on the outside. I mean, that was a ballsy move in a spot that you didn't expect it, and I gave him full credit. I thought that really showed guts and determination, and basically he went and took it. I think he's felt that in the past he's let a couple of them slip away, especially Mid-Ohio last year, because he wasn't assertive enough. And this time, he was taking no prisoners. And, again, learning how to win these things takes a while. And it's one of those things that I think he's learning. And, it, you know, whether you win them on a short track, a super speedway, or a road course, winning is winning. And winning breeds winning. So you learn how to win these things, and that will carry over to other track styles. And I'm willing to say that now that he's done a couple of them, it'll be interesting to see how this carries over when we get back to intermediates. But I think he's better now than he was at the beginning of the year. I'm still not ready to crown him a Final Four contender.
Yeah, no, I said sneakishly for a reason, because I don't think right now he'd either get there either. But that fourth spot, and who knows, maybe all four spots are up for grab, because as we saw last year, anything can happen in the playoffs in the Xfinity Series. With Allgaier missing it, Bell having to win at Phoenix in order to advance, and they'd won, 12 races last year combined. So anything can happen for sure. I don't know. Cindric's impressed me this year, and he talks about playoff points a lot and how much they mean, and we've seen how much they mean. He's got, 10 of them now or 11 of them in the past 2 weeks? I think he won a stage at Watkins Glen. I could be mistaken. Those add up, and we still got Road America coming up, and he probably should have won there last year, and he had a failure, I believe, late. So, who knows, Neff? If he goes in the playoffs with 16, 17 playoff points, I mean, that can make the difference.
It could, absolutely. And, and winning these things, building up points makes a difference. And that's why Enfinger is looking way better in trucks, even though he hasn't won a race.
Yeah.
Because he got those 15 bonus points. And that, for all intents and purposes, that's practically a round in the playoffs. And the fact that you get to carry them with you every round, you win a couple more races, you're really hard to beat till you get down to Final Four. And so, yeah, if he knocks off another one here on the next road course to where he's got, 15, 17, 18 playoff points, it's definitely going to help him. And again, it's a confidence thing. You feel that you have the ability, and now you've proven it. And now you're in your mind, you know you have the ability. It's one thing to say you think you have it or feel like you have it, but when you have a trophy sitting on the mantle and you can point to it and say, I do have it, that makes a difference in a driver's head. And I'm willing to say that I think Cindric may be one of those guys that doubted himself. And it's hard not to. I mean, when you're in a seat because of your dad's position, and, we can talk all day about ability and whatever. He's not in that car without his dad's position at Penske. We all know that. But proving that you've got the ability and that it's not just because of daddy's position is huge going forward in his career. And I think these two wins have definitely helped give him that confidence that he belongs there.
I agree. I was surprised that A.J. Allmendinger wasn't really a factor. I know he finished third. He's an incredible road racer. Racing for a colleague and his teammate finished ninth, Justin Haley. They're both good road course racers, as Haley won the race last year at in Canada in the truck series. I thought Allmendinger was going to be more of a factor. He didn't lead a lap. This is, however, his first top three in three starts this year. Is his first two. He also finished top three, but then he got DQ'd. So yeah, I guess that's a step in the right direction. But were you surprised? Because he finished pretty far. I mean, he was third, but pretty far back.
I mean, I was until I heard the post race. I mean, he basically said that they didn't have it, and that he got everything he could out of the car. And from the sound of it, they just he was surprised they were as competitive as they were. And so I think that was just one of those deals where, you know, it, some days you've got it and some days you don't. And I think they missed it for that race, and he got what he could out of it. But they just, that was one of those deals where driver ability got them a third place finish. I think if it wasn't Allmendinger, they're finishing back there in 8th, 9th, 10th place with their teammate. I think it's the fact that Allmendinger is that good on road courses is why they got a third. And if it had been somebody else, they wouldn't have even been that good. And so I attribute that finish more to AJ's talent than I do to the car.
Fair point. Were you on Twitter Saturday night at all?
No.
Oh, well, you missed a good one. Twitter war between Josh Williams and Brandon Brown. I don't know if you saw it or heard about it after the fact, but...
What was my CCU buddy doing?
So, early in the race, I think it was lap 30, Josh Williams kind of drove into Brown, and Brown, it says he spun in turn one, I'm looking at Racing Reference, but he actually went into the fence, like into the tires, and it was, he definitely got shoved there. You just don't end up there. It was kind of like the deal with Allgaier and Chastain last week, it looked like, to a degree. And on Twitter, Brandon Brown mentioned how he got dumped by the 36. Josh Williams took effect to that. Just a Twitter war. I definitely suggest you and anyone else to to look at it, because Brown gives the address to the shop, the Brandon Built Motorsports shop, which is in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And then Josh Williams, like, I don't want to fight you at your mommy's house. So, good stuff there. It was entertaining for sure. They finished.
Sounds like Bristol needs to set up a boxing ring.
And these guys, I mean, you know, we're talking about Brandon Brown, Josh Williams, who are in underfunded equipment, but they're both making the most of that this year. Brown's, 15th in points, and Williams is, 18th or 19th. And, you know, granted, the Xfinity Series this year is... it's really top heavy, and maybe these guys are, you know, further down. They're further up in the standings than they would have been last year because of how many teams dropped out. But I don't know, that's entertaining, and they're going to run around each other a lot this year, and they've had problems in the past, I've been told. So look for that to continue going forward, and maybe this weekend at Bristol, Neff.
Yeah, I guarantee it'll happen at Bristol. You know exactly what's going to happen too. They're going to qualify side by side. Fortunately, Bristol, I believe you ride in a truck by yourself, so they won't make them at least ride in the truck next to each other. But that's always one of my favorites, when you get two dudes that get into each other and talk smack and then have to ride in the truck with each other the next weekend. That is just, that is gold. But I promise you, they're going to qualify either next to each other or nose to tail. And the entire race, they're going to be all over each other. That's just the way it's going to be. And it'll be entertaining for sure. But I mean, this is what we want. We want these guys to have this passion and to talk smack. And I love that and not so much in the Xfinity and trucks, but in Cup, the fact that these guys are running on top of each other all the time now because they can't get away from each other has pushed everybody's buttons. And everybody is angrier and more on edge, and we're seeing it come out of everybody. And so I don't know that I want fist fights every week, but it's kind of like fuel mileage races. If we could have 6 or 8 fist fights a year, I'm good.
I'm good with that too. Just because, I mean, racing is such a passionate sport, and these guys want to do well for them, their team, their family, and most probably importantly, their sponsors. So, and I truly believe that some of the hardest racing in all of NASCAR is in the middle to back half of the Xfinity field. They don't give and take. Tommy Joe Martins was telling me a story last week at Watkins Glen, and Tommy Joe's full of stories. We've had him on last year on the podcast. his rants have rants. But he was telling me at Fontana this year, him and David Starr were racing the hell out of each other for 20th position. And he wanted that 20th position because, I mean, 20th, you might get recognition for 20th. 21st, you're probably not going to get a lot of recognition for. That's just how it is. And he got a shout out from Kyle Petty, who's, I think it's his childhood favorite as a race car driver. He got a shout out from him on Twitter. So he thought that was pretty cool. And he noted how they were racing hard against each other. So this is definitely the Williams and Brown situation is something to watch going forward. Both have been on the podcast this year, and we appreciate them for their time. But Neff, I do want to move forward now with the truck race, because I thought this was an entertaining race. Did you get to see it?
I did. I watched it on DVR, but I did see it. And how about before we even go there, can we talk about the zero truck wrecking in qualifying? Oh, my God.
Big wreck.
That, it was funny. Somebody was talking on Twitter about how TV doesn't give you a perspective of how fast these guys are going. And I've always maintained, if you want to see how fast they're going, watch that Michael McDowell wreck.
Yeah.
When that thing turns right and you see how fast it gets from the bottom of the track to the wall, that gives you the idea of how fast they're going. Because when they're going with the flow of the track, it's just the illusion of it. You don't get the feel of the speed. But when they go perpendicular to the track, then you see how fast it is. And that was the way it was with that zero truck. Man, that thing turned right, and it plowed into the wall. And that was scary. That's one of those that I was, you know, you commend the safer barriers and the safety equipment and all that. But, man, you get a hit like that, I promise you his grandkids are going to be feeling that one in 50 years, because that was big.
Yeah, and that his name Daniel Sassnett. He's driving for Jennifer Jo Cobb. He's made 3 starts this year, made 1 ARCA start. I believe it was last year, from what I saw. Yeah, that was a big wreck. And you brought up a perfect point with the McDowell crash from 2008 at Texas. You definitely, and in a truck too. I mean, you know, the truck series isn't like your normal truck, but they're still hauling ass. And when you see one get away like that, yeah, that was a big crash. And I didn't see that live. I saw it on Twitter, and it looked bad. So thankfully he's okay. But now, as I mentioned, entertaining race, I thought, from start to finish. You had Sheldon Creed, Harrison Burton, Todd Gilliland, and Ben Rhodes all needing to win to get in. And theoretically they could, because they've all had speed at some point this year. And believe it or not, they're all running towards the front for a lot of this race. So Ben Rhodes, I thought he had the best truck, arguably, and he had some issues late, finishing 2 laps down, unfortunately, not making the playoffs. Sheldon Creed there at the end had a hell of a run, and I think 1 or 2 more laps maybe would have got by Hill, or at least made it interesting. And I guess even Tyler Dipple came into a factor, because he finished 3rd, which is his career best finish, and he was also in a must-win situation. And then we have Burton and Gilliland both missing the playoffs for Kyle Busch Motorsports. I know I just threw a lot at you, but what are your takes from that truck race?
I feel bad for Sheldon Creed. Of all those guys, I feel like he has had the best chance of winning a race this year. It didn't.
I agree.
Mean, he finished 2nd 2 weeks in a row the last 2 weeks. And it just, I feel like he's been in the mix and really been knocking on a door, and it just hasn't lined up for him. I would love to be in a competition meeting on Monday or Tuesday at Kyle Busch Motorsports, because I mean you know they're struggling, and it's, you have to remember that they're 18 and 19 years old, and I hope that Kyle is patient with them. But at the same time, it's Kyle Busch Motorsports, and Kyle went out in that equipment and won 5 races. So it's got to be ugly up there in Mooresville right now. And the only thing I hope, well, the 2 things I hope. I hope he's patient with the kids, and I hope both of them go out and win over the playoffs. And I think that would be at least a bit of soothing for the organization if they could both go out and nab a win before the end of the season. And don't forget, Greg Biffle wanted that stuff too.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, you see that, and that's where you got to, you know, the pressure really mounts on those kids, because other guys are jumping in the equipment and winning. Yes, they're cup-level drivers, but it shows that the equipment's there. Other than that, I felt a little surprised at Matt Crafton bitching about the process. I mean, go win. I mean, it's if you want to be in, go win. And yes, it's tough in the trucks because they only take eight guys, and it's a more even field than most of the other National Touring Series. But in all honesty, if you can't win, you don't deserve to be a champion. It's that simple. And that's, I know we've had Austin Dillon won a championship without winning a race, and it can happen, but I feel like if you can't win a race, then you have no leg to stand on to bitch about not making the playoffs. And yes, he made them, but he was just grumbling about the fact that he almost didn't, and I think you need to win a race.
Yeah, I think it's a tough deal for Rhodes and Burton, because right now they're 1 point apart, and now ninth and tenth in points. But they finished, I think, fifth and sixth in the regular season championship standings, and they're out. But like you said, if you're going to be a champion, go win. And you had guys like Tyler Ankrum and even Johnny Sauter, who I know he missed a race and hasn't had a good year at all, but they won during the regular season, and ultimately they got him in. I do agree with you on Creed. I think Creed's shown a lot of speed this year. He should have won a couple races, in my opinion. Dover comes to mind. Kentucky comes to mind, where he had fast cars, the 144 laps this year. He's had a couple top fives in the last two races and six top tens. And he's shown a lot of speed with GMS. At times, I feel like he's ran even better than Moffitt, who Moffitt's obviously the defending champion in that series with the new team this year in GMS. But it is a disappointment for him. But he's, you know, with that speed came a ton of inconsistency, a lot of crashes, and ultimately just missing the playoffs. But I felt like if any of them were going to win this past weekend, it probably would have been him, even though I know last week I picked Harrison Burton to win the race on the podcast. That was just to make it interesting. But Creed is, you know, he's shown the speed. He showed it in ARCA. He showed it this year. I think he's definitely going to be a threat next year in trucks.
For sure. And like you said, we've seen it in ARCA. And we've seen just some races out of him this year that were really impressive. And I think it's just a matter of time before we see him winning races and contending for championships at the national level. Again, I look at trucks and Xfinity and Cup, and I'm like, where are we putting all these guys?
Yeah, right.
There is so much talent right now in young drivers, and the way the business model is, not enough seats to put them all in at the Cup level. And it's going to be frustrating, I think. Interestingly, and I know it'll probably never happen, but it's almost to a point now where you might start seeing NASCAR guys start filling in seats in IndyCar. You know, I mean, it's the NASCAR seats are all full of young talent. IndyCar's got some older guys that are hanging around with Dixon and Kanaan and guys like that. Maybe some of these young NASCAR guys get a shot at the Indy side.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, but I agree. Yeah, there's a lot of talent coming up, and there's not many seats at the Cup level. And even the Xfinity level, at least competitive seats for these truck drivers. So, you know, you'll have Custer, Reddick, and Bell probably moving up next year. At least two of the three for sure, I'd imagine. But if I had to guess, all three. So that'll open up three good seats, but... yeah, and then the truck series, you know, they'll lose some talent moving up, but then they'll get, it's a pipeline of talent that's just coming up, and you start so young now that by the time, we see it with Harrison Burton, Todd Gillen, for them, I almost feel like a change, maybe not for Harrison, because he's so young, and so new to the truck series, but maybe like Todd, we've seen it with Logano a couple years ago, and he talked about this on Door Bumper Clear this week, and on Dirty Mo's radio, that he felt like a change was needed. And remember, when that change happened, he was like 22 years old, 21 years old at Joe Gibbs Racing. And that was arguably at the time the best team in the series, in the Cup Series. Now, comparing that to Todd Gilliland, who Kyle Busch Motorsports, yes, like you said, we've seen they have the equipment. Kyle goes out, and yes, it's Kyle Busch, but he was 5-for-5 this year. Biffle wins. And yet these two, they can't get to victory lane. Specifically Todd, who's now the longest... he's had the most starts for a Kyle Busch Motorsports driver to never win a race. So that's weighing on him. Maybe a change is needed for him. And you know, I hope Kyle doesn't give up on him either, because I think they're both very talented. But I guess we'll have to wait and see, because I feel like something's going to get shucking up. They've already shaken up the crew chief lineup a couple times. So something's going to happen there now.
I mean, I almost hope it doesn't. You know, if you sit there and keep shaking up crew chiefs, guys aren't getting an opportunity to build a relationship. And, yeah, you need to perform or move on, but at 18 and 19, it just takes a while. I mean, there's so much you're learning when you're going from running supers or running late models to touring nationally. And the pomp and circumstance, yes, I know truck racing pre-race isn't Cup, but it's still way bigger than it is running at South Boston on Saturday night.
Right.
And the crowds aren't what they are for Cup, but they're still way bigger than South Boston on a Saturday night. And then throw on top of that the pressure of being in KBM equipment. So it's a matter of putting in a little bit of time and having a little bit of patience with them. It's got to be frustrating when you're Kyle, and I know he's got to be mad about the fact that NASCAR has limited him to not being able to run but five races, because in all honesty, I think if he was out there with them for 10, 12, 15 weeks, he might be able to teach them, and they might be able to learn from him on track. And with him not being there, not being in the same equipment, you don't know what other guys are driving. But you know what he would be in, and he could better relate to them what he's feeling and how he's driving, which I think in the long run would make them better drivers.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also we got to remember, with all the speculation about Bell moving up, that's going to open up a ride in the Toyota camp. And you got two young drivers who know they haven't won yet, but that doesn't seem to matter these days. One of them could definitely be on the move up to Xfinity. And we've seen Harrison. I mean, he's, in my opinion, he runs better in Xfinity. Even though he only has a couple starts. So
right. That'll
be something to keep an eye on. Now, if I also want to keep an eye on this Truck Series playoffs, because they start this weekend. Now, they last over 3 months with seven races. That just seems kind of unheard of. The second round doesn't start 2 months from now. You got Austin Hill, Brett Moffitt, Grant Enfinger, Stuart Friesen, Matt Crafton, Johnny Sauter, Ross Chastain, and Tyler Ankrum filling those eight spots. Who do you think are going to be the first two eliminated?
Man, I know he's going to be mad at me for saying this, but I really feel like Matt Crafton's going to be one of the first two out. I just, all season long, I've just felt like they have been off and just have not been the 88 team of the past. And when it's as competitive and as tightly balanced as it is at the top of this truck field, I feel like that's where they're falling short, and they haven't won, and I don't feel like they've really been in contention to win. And at this point, when you'll end up having the eight guys in the playoffs finish in the top 10, you can't have weeks where you give points up, and I feel like they're giving up too many points. So I'm going to say Crafton, and then the other one's Friesen. Wow. And it's for a completely different reason. Friesen just seems to have the worst luck on a planet when it comes to racing. And that dude, I feel like he's going to go to Bristol and probably be leading and run into the back of a back marker and poke a hole in a radiator and be out and then not be able to make it back from that DNF. And then that's just, you know, obviously it's just gut feeling. You have no idea how this really plays out. But Friesen's luck has just been god-awful. And I feel like he's going to be the other guy that doesn't make it to the second round.
Interesting. I'm going to agree with you on Crafton. Granted, you know how he's only led 34 laps this year, which is the fewest he's led since 2010. Now, he did finish, I believe, second in the regular season championship, second or third. But consistency can only get you so far in the playoffs. It can essentially get you to Homestead, I guess. We've seen it in the Cup Series. I think it's a little harder in the Truck Series. Especially because you don't have Cup drivers or Xfinity drivers coming down to, you know, win the races. So I think Crafton's going to be out. I also think Austin Hill. I know he won, and we didn't really talk about him winning this week at Michigan, which good run for them. But he's the definition of inconsistency this year. He's got the two wins, bookending the regular season at Daytona and Michigan, eight top tens in 16 races. But then his other eight races are really... I mean, there's a couple top 15s, but then there's a lot of, like, 25th or worse. Like Vegas earlier in the year, he finished 30th. But then I want to look at that three races going into Michigan. He finished 31st at Kentucky, 30th at Pocono, and last at Eldora. And there's 32 trucks. So that's an average finish of 31st over three races. You know, that granted, that was a lot of bad luck, an engine issue, a crash at Eldora, and then a clutch issue at Pocono. So he's had five DNFs this year in the 16 races, which, like I said, inconsistent. I don't know. They're the defending champions. They definitely have speed, as they showed this week in Michigan. But I think the inconsistency worries me. As you said with Friesen, he's got a lot of bad luck. I also think Hill's got a lot of bad luck. But
yeah, I guess I'm with you on that, and I could definitely see that happening. I liked that they won this weekend. I think that if had they not won this weekend, I would have absolutely been putting him as one of the first two out. But the as you said, defending champions, I think the equipment is capable, and him. I mean, we've seen it throughout the year. They've been running up front, and as you said, bad luck has hit them. They've done some things to themselves, knocked themselves out. So we'll see how it goes, but I think winning this weekend was big, and I think that momentum may be enough to help carry them to the second round. I don't see them making a Final Four by any stretch, but I could see them potentially making the next round. I think they're going to be in the battle to be above the cut line. I think they will be very close to not making it, but I think they'll make it.
Yeah, and the Truck Series is also on this little streak of last place finishes the previous week, wins the next week. We saw Friesen finish 32nd at Pocono, wins Eldora. Hill finished last at Eldora and then wins this week at Michigan. Neff, I'm going to put a very high bet that Norm Benning is not going to win this weekend. But you never know. It would be one of the biggest upsets, probably the biggest in NASCAR history, even though we saw that probably last month at Daytona. But it would, you know, like a Ross Chastain finished 30th, he could definitely win this weekend in Bristol. Now, this is a good time to get into predictions since we're bringing this up. Now, if we're going to Bristol this week, I'm pumped. I'm going to be there for the second straight Bristol night race. You know, Dale Jr. always touts this as this was the one race as a kid that he could not miss during the summer because of the kind of the spectacle that it is. I know last year when I went in there, I got the goosebumps. I'm pumped for this weekend, as I said. But we got triple header, a lot of racing this weekend, and we got a K&N East race. So who you got winning the truck race at Bristol?
God, Norm Benning won the truck race. They would tear that place down. It would be, I mean, I was at Eldora when Norm made it through the last chance race, and you'd have thought he won the championship. The crowd was going out of their damn minds. If he actually won a race, it would be just ridiculous. I can't even fathom what that place would do. But in all honesty, I don't picture that happening. As much as I would love to see Norm put it all together. I'm sticking with what works. Ross Chastain, dude, is just on fire. And I think that, I mean, their equipment's good enough to win races anyway, but I think it's especially good enough to win on a short track where it's more about driver.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do think Ross is going to win. But to be different, I'll go Johnny Sauter. He won this race last year.
There you go.
John Hunter Nemechek probably should have won this race last year, dominated. And then they thought they were running a few of the few laps to go, but yet still managed a top five finish. So off the top of my head, I don't remember what exactly happened there. But Sauter got the win last year. He really needs a win because after the past 3 months since his win at Dover, it's been miserable for that team. Obviously returning to ThorSport this year. So it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of regain that momentum. And as we've seen, I mean, he's in the Truck Series playoffs. He's kind of like the standard bearer. I know he's only won one of the three champions, chips since they went to this new format, but, I think the playoffs suit him very well. And I think he wins. I mean, I think Ross is going to win, but I'll go Sauter, for my pick. And also, you know, we mentioned how Michigan was entertaining. Had Ross not gotten wrecked on pit road, I don't think that race would have been entertaining, at least for the win.
No. That was going to be one boring race because Chastain had them covered.
Just like Pocono.
Hey, now, my dark horse at Bristol, watch Timothy Peterson at 92 for Ricky Benton. That team, shows up at the local at the short tracks, and you've got Timothy Peters at Bristol. If they won, it would not be the most shocking of stories. Let's just put it that way.
You got it. Now, enough. We got an Xfinity race at Bristol. Christopher Bell kind of dominated the spring race. Are you going with the easy bet?
No, just because I'll let you have that one since I took the easy bet in the previous one. I'll let you have Bell on this one. I mean, in all honesty, I think Kyle Busch is going to win it, but that's taking the really easy way out. Man, I'm going to go with Briscoe just because he has found something of late and really is feeling a little froggy, and I can see him mixing it up and maybe doing a last minute bumping around on somebody to grab the win. So I'll go to the old 98 with Chase Briscoe.
You also got Eric Jones racing this race in the 81 for Extreme Concepts. Jeff Earnhardt last week announced that he's not returning, or he kind of ended the deal with Extreme Concepts. So Jones is filling in for that 81 car. They're still running this week. And we've seen Jones. I mean, this is one of his better tracks. Now, I am going with Bell because I think it's going to be a good race between him and Kyle. And you could even throw in like an Allgaier, who Allgaier probably should have won the spring race. I know Bell, I said he dominated. But Bell was out to lunch in the first stage and a half. Well, Allgaier kind of dominated the first stage and a half, and then had a clutch issue or a hub issue. So you never know. Allgaier's a good short track racer, but I'll go Bell. Now, Neff.
I'm also excited to see what Jeb Burton does in E8.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see Jeb get a shot at some real equipment. And I will be very hopeful to see Jeb get a top 10, if not a top 5. I think that would be an amazing run for him.
Yeah, he got a top 10 at Texas earlier this year, and in those three starts so far in the 8 car, he hasn't finished worse than 9th. So I would look forward to seeing him, and he's a good short track racer too. Cut his teeth coming up on the short tracks. Now, Neff, the main event, obviously the Cup race. Are we going to go with a pair of Busch brothers here?
The K&N East race is the main event, isn't it? Haley Deegan's running K&N East. The world's going to come to an end.
Right.
Sorry.
But main event, Cup race. Are we going to pick a pair of Busch brothers here?
No.
No.
No. As much as I think Kyle's going to win it, I am going with Larson. Larson has been so damn close at Bristol so many times. It is time that it finally comes together. And I'm going to say the 42 ends up winning it over Kyle with hopefully a last lap, three wide at the finish line, sparks, smoke, fire flying finish with the Busch brothers on either side of him and a 42 nosing ahead.
Interesting.
I think that's amazing.
That would be amazing. I do think the Busch brothers are going to be very strong. They've won the past four races there combined, I believe. I'm going with Kurt Busch. So we're on the Chip Ganassi Racing bandwagon here. Kurt won this race last year, finished second here in the spring to Kyle. This is his best track. Also one of Kyle's best tracks. But I think Kurt's going to get it in the number one car. Neff, any final thoughts here before we kind of sign off?
No, I mean, it's Bristol. Place better be sold out. If you people aren't selling out the night race in Bristol, you got a problem. And I know that getting people in the stands has been a challenge for us over the last few years, and the luster has come off of the sport a little bit. But this is old school, great racing. Yes, they can run more than one lane, and that's a beautiful thing at a half-mile track. I know everybody wants to see them have to move guys to pass them, but I am so excited for this race. I hate I can't be there. I've got a commitment in Pennsylvania, so I'll be watching on TV. But this is one of the three or four races all year that I look forward to more than anything, and I am super excited to see what happens because I think this is going to be the best race of the year.
Last year, I think it was the best race of the year.
I agree.
I might be a little biased, but like you just backed me up, so maybe I'm not. I thought it was a hell of a race, and it was just a good first impression for sure in Bristol, which we've seen over the past few years. I mean, it's usually a good race, but there are some, I guess, barn burners there that aren't very good. Now, Neff, we got Landon Castle coming up on the podcast. Second year with Starcom Racing, obviously been around the sport for the past decade or so, but I talked to him in depth at Watkins Glen kind of about the Xfinity Series because, man, he's getting the most out of the equipment in Morgan Shepherd Racing. He's got a couple top 15 starts, I guess a 13th and a 16th. Now, granted, Morgan Shepherd only has one car, so it's usually why it's starting parks. But I feel like Landon's really been able to showcase his talent in this limited opportunity with Morgan Shepherd.
Yeah, he's another one of those guys that you wonder if he could get a shot at top-level equipment and have a year at it. What would he do? And I know we talked about it a bunch earlier in the podcast. I would almost like to see Landon run a year in a Kyle Busch truck. I think it would be really interesting to see what he could do, because I think he would win 5 or 6 races if he ran a year in a Busch truck.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Neff. Let's get to my conversation with Landon Castle. This year, running with Starcom Racing, had some solid runs at the Short Track Super Speedways. Overall, how'd you gauge the season?
I think it's going well. I mean, it's a big task for Derek and this team to build a race team from scratch, and especially build one from scratch where, you know, you're not just coming in and farming out your competition to a bigger organization, you know, by way of a technical alliance or anything. I mean, they're, you know, manufacturing, people, everything is all in-house here at Starcom Racing. So, you know, that's a slow and tedious process.
What have been some of the strengths?
I think our strengths are, you know, our ownership. I think we have owners that want to race and want to be here, and they're willing to you know, stick this out. I mean, I think the Gen 7 car up ahead of us is a bit of an unknown for a lot of people, but you know, I think people need to wrap their head around the changing of the business model for car owners, and that in the long term it's gonna be better.
Now, last year this team kind of dove into the deep end, you know, mm-hmm. coming into the Cup Series first year team, really. What have you seen some of the biggest improvements from last year?
I mean, I think that just kind of organizing is most improved. You know, getting a better shop, a better place for our guys to work. Last year, our shop wasn't really was probably holding back a lot of our production. So, moving into a new building in Salisbury was probably a huge improvement for us.
You said it's in Salisbury?
Yep.
Now, when you go to a track, what do you consider a successful day? Because obviously, working with a limited budget, you guys are attracting new sponsors, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you consider a successful day?
Car in one piece, and, you know, competing with the 15, the 32 for position are good days for us. I mean, there's, you know, you can kind of draw definitive lines in the Cup Series right now, around that 15th to 20th range of cars that no longer have manufacturer support, and then there's that middle group of cars that buy their technology from the cars with manufacturer support, and so those cars kind of tend to compete against each other for position. And then there's the cars that don't have manufacturer support and don't buy manufacturer support from bigger organizations, and those cars kind of compete against each other for position, and that's the group that we're in. And you know, it seems like a good progress for teams is to get to the point where you're at the top of that heap, and then your, you know, sponsorship and support are to the level that you can upgrade your equipment and your technology to be the customer of one of your competitors, I guess.
Do you feel like that's a bigger factor at the Cup level compared to some of the other levels like Xfinity?
The model is the same at the Xfinity level. I think that there's just, it's maybe a little bit more organized in the Cup Series. I don't know if organized is the right word. I think the model is the same across all the racing series. I mean, in the Xfinity Series, you have teams that are buying cars from GMS and, you know, getting their technology from one of their competitors that are, you know, the originators of the technology. And then in the Truck Series, you have the same, you know, the same thing. You got people getting their trucks from bigger teams. So, you know, hopefully the Gen 7 car can level that out. You know, it's kind of hard to imagine that in order for us to be better in the sport, you have to give money to your own competitors in order to try to chase them. So hopefully you know, with the Gen 7 car, it can make it to where a independent team can stand on its own and be a little bit more competitive on its own without having to subsidize a larger organization.
Now, I mentioned how you guys have ran well at the Super Speedways this year, but how much does Daytona kind of haunt you guys?
I mean, it does. It always will. I mean, you know, we had that choice that we could have stayed out, and it would have been us in front of the 77 car. But, you know, racing is definitely a fickle thing.
How often do you lean on Derek? Because obviously he's got a ton of experience starting this team last year from scratch at the cup level. How much do you lean on him?
A lot. I mean, I talk to him every week and at the racetrack, and I think that, you know, this is really one of my first experiences where the general manager of my team is a relevant retired driver, and I feel like Derek empathizes with me well in a conversation where I talk about the car, and it helps me articulate what's going on. And I think that Derek is going through his own, you know, growth as a manager. He's owned his own team before, but now he's purely a general manager working for a team owner, and he's at the Cup Series, and I think that he's also going through his own personal growth on how to run a race team.
Now, I talked to you after how I wanted to talk about the Xfinity Series.
Mm-hmm.
You've ran 7 races this year between Morgan Shepherd's team and JD Motorsports.
Yeah.
How's that process been?
It's been great. I mean, you know, Johnny, I kind of, I'm always willing to do whatever Johnny needs me to do. He's been there for me in my career multiple times, and we work really well together. So when he got in a bind with the Ross Chastain stuff, he needed me to fill in after Ross switched his points and was no longer able to run in the Xfinity Series and wasn't earning Xfinity driver points for Johnny, which put Johnny in a position where he had to find a driver that had Xfinity Series points that could run those races and also earn the driver points fund money that they had originally counted on when the year started. So Johnny kind of filled me in on what was going on, and I was happy to stand in for him. And then with Morgan, it's a little bit different. You know, Morgan's had a couple positions in the last, you know, 6 to 9 months where it was extremely crucial for him to make the race, and he didn't, you know, he was called me up and needed my help, and I'm glad to fill in for him and help him get that car in the show. And I think Morgan is a guy that's been in the sport for a long time and knows how to build a good race car. I mean, his cars have always driven well, and every time I've driven them, even though they're old and, you know, he's had the same car for a long time and he only has one car, he has to take care of it. I think he does a good job putting it together, you know, and I think for the competition that I have to beat to qualify that car into the race, I think that car's plenty capable of making it.
I want to talk about each individual a little bit more. For Johnny, you ran, what, 2.5 pretty much years full time with him in mm-hmm. Xfinity, what, 2012 or 14?
Really more than 2.5, because I started in 2013. At Fontana was my first race for him. So second, third race of the season, I drove for him and ran all of 2013, all of 2014, all of 2015.
You said he's always been there for you. What's it like to have a guy like that who's respected in the Xfinity garage? Mm-hmm. You know, they work on a budget, but he's very well respected within even, you know, some of the top tier drivers and teams in that series.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, he's been there for me, I would say, in a way that, he was hiring me to drive a car and paying me every week to drive a car when he, you know, had multiple cars and had people bringing sponsorship and had a rotating seat, but he always had one car that he really wanted to perform, and he wanted to prioritize the driver, he wanted to prioritize the performance of that car, and that's kind of part of the business model for a team like his. You know, when you run multiple cars, you have to have a car that's sort of the main attraction, and a car for, you know, your younger drivers or your drivers with sponsorship to aspire to want to drive or get, you know, sort of set the bar for what your team can do. And so it was helpful for both of us, but it was particularly helpful for my career to be able to run for him full time like that. It helps a lot to be able to run both races in the Cup Series and Xfinity Series every week.
as far as Morgan goes, you mentioned how, you know, it's got one car, it's an old car.
Yep.
But you wheel that thing. I mean, you have, what, three top 20 starts or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yes, you start in parks, but how good is that equipment, even though it's just one car, because you're wheeling it out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, I think it's to be able to qualify 15th to 20th in the Xfinity Series, you know, you've got to have a good motor, and I think that his motor runs as good as any of Johnny's, and you got to get the car balanced. You know, you don't have to have the newest car. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be balanced, and the platform has to be right. And so, you know, when I drive that car, that's what I focus on. You know, I work with him and his guys, and we usually make two qualifying runs in practice, because we'll have one set of tires for practice. So I'll make one qualifying run on a set of stickers, and then I'll cool it down. In the next practice session, we'll make another qualifying run on those scuffs. We get we have two shots at our adjustments, and what I focus on is just making sure the balance is going to be what it is, and I make sure the platform is right. And it seems like if you can get those two things right, in the Xfinity Series, you can qualify top 20 by making a good lap. So, you know, racing is a whole different story. I mean, there's a lot that he would need to do to get that car to be able to run a whole race, and to run it competitively. But, you know, right now he's building he's kind of rebuilding his program to the point that hopefully he can do that, I guess.
How do they go about getting in contact with you? Obviously, you've been there for Johnny whenever he needed it, likewise, like you just said. But is it just random races? They just call you up and be like, hey, are you available this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Morgan will call me himself and, and give me a call. It's pretty cool to get a call from Morgan Shepherd.
Would you be open to going back to Xfinity full time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's helpful for me to run full-time Cup and Xfinity, especially for small teams. I think the extra laps are make up for, you know, engineering tools that we lack on this side of the garage.
Cool. Now I'll end it on this one. Fan question from at the NASCAR Times. What would you be doing if you weren't a race car driver, Landon?
I don't know. I'd probably sell used cars or... you know, I do love the sport. I love NASCAR. You know, I feel like I would love to serve the sport in any way I could. So, you know, if I couldn't continue as a race car driver, hopefully the sport could still have a role for me. You know, because I have a passion for it, and I've spent my entire life in it, so I feel like I know a lot about it. And I enjoy articulating with people the nuances of our sport and how it works. So it'd be cool to be able to serve the sport some way beyond my driving career.
Did you have any regular jobs growing up?
Not really. I mean, I worked around at my dad's car dealership when I was really young. I washed cars. I washed cars and mowed the lawn at my dad's dealership, and that was kind of the only sort of paid job I ever had when I was, you know, 11 to 12 years old. But I was racing a lot during that time period, and really, racing got pretty serious for me at that age, and that's when our race shop was at my dad's dealership, and I spent all day every day working on race cars. So I learned how to work on cars and work on race cars in that part of my life.
Cool, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Dustin.
All right, y'all. So there you have it. Fun conversation there with Landon, who I know it's not the sexiest of stats, but StarCom has definitely improved this year compared to last. Also fun to hear what he thinks about the possibility of one day going back full-time racing in the Xfinity Series. As always, I enjoyed talking Michigan with Neff. Overall, I personally thought it was a good race, and I'm much happier with the on-track product that we saw this weekend compared to the June race at Michigan. Again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, and let us know what we're doing right, some of the things we're doing wrong, some things that we can improve on, as well as guests you'd like to see coming up. But that's it for this week's show. We'll be back next week to review a full weekend of racing at Bristol. Until then, we out.